My guest is Admiral James Stavridis. He is a retired military man, U.S. Naval Academy, spent over 35 years on active service. And in his new book, he talks about how 11 years of his life had been spent on the ocean, away from seeing land. He was also first Navy officer chosen as Supreme Allied Commander for Global Operations at NATO. And a four-star admiral joins us now. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Great to be with you, David.
Let me ask, first of all, something I was not planning on asking you about until the news over the weekend, and that news has to do with the collision of the Navy destroyer, the USS Fitzgerald, with a container ship. What were your first thoughts when you heard about this news?
Well, just the overwhelming tragedy of it. And of course, David, I commanded the sister ship, the identical ship, some years ago. For 2.5 years I was captain. I spent 1,000 days in that cabin, which is right where the ship was struck by the merchant. What we ought to focus on is the heroism of the crew. That ship could easily have sunk, and the fact that, thankfully, this is an extremely rare occurrence, once in a decade kind of collision. The investigation will pull it all apart, but above all, we ought to be thankful of the heroic work of the crew, and we ought to be mindful of the tragedy of their losing 7 shipmates.
In regard to your book, Sea Power, the History and the Geopolitics of the World's Oceans, a couple of things come to mind having here you give that answer. One is that it is still crucial that there is a presence of the Navy, the U.S. Navy, worldwide on water oceans. Would that be a correct statement for you, sir?
It totally is. Just look at the crises around the world today. The Korean Peninsula, Kim Jong-un. Here's a news flash. Korea's a peninsula. It's surrounded by water. Our carriers, our destroyers, our Tomahawk missiles are there as a deterrent against that madman. Look at the Eastern Mediterranean. The jet that just shot down the Syrian fighter was a Navy jet. It came off an aircraft carrier, the George W. Bush, off the coast of Syria. Look up in the Arctic, where we compete with Russia on a daily basis. All around the world, our ships are vitally needed to protect the global commons. 95% of the world's trade moves by sea. We have got to protect that. We've got to show the flag. We've got to project power when we need to, as we have over the last 10 years, certainly.
That's one of the things I learned by reading your book, and that is, as you just said, the commerce of this world is dependent upon ocean trade routes and routes. I was reading early in the book, and I wanted to know, well, how many ships are out on the ocean as we speak? And you answered that later on. What is your best estimate of the number of ships, cargo ships, or ships that are transporting things that we depend on and would like to see in our stores?
50,000. On any given day, there's somewhere between 3 and 5 million people at sea, out of sight of deep land, and probably 3 to 4 to maybe 5,000 warships operating at sea. The oceans are huge. They're 70% of the world, but they're increasingly crowded. And also very much a source of real challenge to the United States as both Russia and China build big fleets that are expanding. We need to meet that challenge.
Interesting, because I read this someplace, and I don't know whether it's part of your book or just information about your book. When I look at the globe, I see the continents, and then the water is just kind of something that divides up the land masses. And when you look at it, you see it like in the flip-flop opposite.
I do, and here's something to think about for your listeners. If you took all the land in the world and you squished it together, it would fit inside the Pacific Ocean alone. You could take the continental United States plus Alaska times three, and it would fit inside the Indian Ocean. These are vast spaces. They're sources of hydrocarbons, sources of protein. They're where 95% of the world's trade moves. They are the lungs of the earth. 70% of all the oxygen we breathe comes from photosynthesis at sea. So it is crucial to understand the impact of that on America's destiny, and that's why I wrote the book, Sea Power.
Help me understand also, because this is one of the other things. When I think, like I said, when I look at the globe, I see the land. When I think of NATO, I think of land, and I think of agreements between countries on land. You were the first Navy man, officer, chosen as the Supreme Allied Commander of Global Operations at NATO. So what do you see as broadening our perspective about NATO's importance when you broaden it as a Navy man?
Sure. Let's first do the numbers. The United States has 275 warships. NATO has 500 warships, the rest of NATO. So this is an enormous resource of ships. Secondly, our ships, both U.S. and the European NATO allies, work together across that Atlantic, pushing back Russia and making sure they don't come to dominate the Atlantic. Thirdly, those NATO ships operating together are pushing against ISIS. That's where these strikes are coming from aircraft carriers and from cruisers and destroyers, both U.S. and the rest of NATO. And fourthly, as these waves of refugees, which contain jihadists, are coming across to the European side, and then on to the United States, we want to catch them at the source. We don't want them to get to Europe or, God forbid, to the United States. So NATO sea power plays a vital role in all of that.
So what are we left with when we think of this? I'll tell you, as I read this, I was impressed by, I think you have a great love for literature, and I think it shows through, especially with your writing. But then at the same time, I was thinking, I have such a tremendous respect for those first people decades, centuries, maybe millenniums ago, when they set out in a boat that wouldn't be anything like we have today and departed until we couldn't see them anymore. All of these things play into that. And I'm thinking, I can appreciate this on so many different levels. What would you say would be a takeaway or two that you would hope people would pick up sea power and would say, okay, I understand, I get it now?
I think in terms of the importance of the oceans, I would hope that people understand the role that sea power plays in deterrence and keeping the peace on the world's oceans, from North Korea to Syria to Russia. All of these global challenges, sea power plays a role. Secondly, trade. 95% of international trade flows on these oceans, and it's not a free good. We have to defend it and keep it open. And thirdly, it's the environment. If we don't start paying more attention to the environment overall, we will rue the day that we failed to do so, as the planet really faces strategic challenges. So I'd say to people, understand the oceans in those dimensions, and then finally, the oceans are beautiful. Find a way to take a cruise, to go to sea, to have an office with a view out there, if only for a week or a few days, and appreciate the natural beauty of 70% of our planet. That's what I tried to convey in the book, Sea Power.
Well, it seems like you've succeeded totally from my point of view. And if I can just squeeze in one more thing that always stay with me, and that is when you talk about the pollution somewhere, you mentioned that there is basically an island of plastic and debris in the ocean that's as big as the state of Texas. I will always remember that, and will not try to throw anything in our rivers here that would make it into the ocean. Okay.
It sounds great. And I know many of your listeners are a long way from the sea, but the seas matter, and I hope they find a chance to get to the coast and get underway and get out of sight of land and really appreciate those oceans.
Admiral, thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure, David. Thank you.